Good afternoon. My name is Tom Rogan. I'm the new head of investor relations at Norske Skog. I would like to welcome you all to this Q&A session following the three quarter results. I'm joined from the corporate management by CEO Sven Ombudstvedt and the CFO Audun Rønneid. The CEO Sven Ombudstvedt will give a short general introduction.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Just a few words from my side as an introductory note before we hand over to the Q&A session. The third quarter was somewhat better than the second quarter, both in terms of EBITDA and cash flow, and with EBITDA reaching 469 million, the year total is now 1,012 NOK. We have improved the guiding slightly from the second quarter, where we now say that we will, for the full year, be somewhat above the actual reported level of last year, which was then in slightly in excess of 1.4 billion. Cash flow in the quarter, as expected, positive. The second half is normally more cash generative because of working capital issues, but also for the company in total, we pay more interest than the actual interest cost in the second quarter, meaning that the third quarter generates more cash. This has allowed us to reduce the net debt by 300 million, down to about 8 billion at the end of the quarter, despite a negative currency impact on the net debt with the strengthening of the dollar towards the end of the third quarter. We took impairments of 1.9 billion in the quarter, mainly related to our Dutch facility at Parenco, which we have moved from newsprint to magazine and done an impairment valuation in conjunction with that. And also we have minor adjustments in all the units, primarily related to the adjustment of useful life. This will most likely lead to reduced depreciation going forward of about 50 million per quarter. In addition to this, the third quarter in general is marked by reasonable operating performance as the Norwegian mill at Saugbrugs is back to full production in the third quarter. So we now have reasonable operating rates for all segments in Europe, about 90%, outside of Europe in the high 90s. So with those short comments, I will hand over to Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will take our first question today from Jussi Joskola from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Firstly, I would be interested in hearing your view on the recent price negotiations for newsprint for Q4 in different regions. I mean, what kind of price increases should we assume for the ongoing quarter? And second of all, do you have any opinion on 2012 negotiations, especially for those companies who are conducting biannual price negotiations? Secondly, I'm interested a bit about your cost savings in the quarter, which were 100 million krona. I understand the energy savings bit from here, but can you please elaborate a bit on what are the reasons here? I thought that you're pretty much hedged for your energy consumption in Norway. What's your existing hedging level right now? Thanks.
Okay. On the price side, difference between Q3 and Q4 is rather minimal. There is a difference, but not significant. So Q4 prices for newsprint or for magazine, for that matter, is probably quite similar. So you should not expect a big change between the quarters. When it comes to the 2012 negotiations, and this is a European comment, we expect price increases from the 1st of January with all our price negotiations on a quarterly basis for newsprint Europe. Magazine, there's still a little bit of biannual contracts for certain customer segments. We expect that partly that there will be an increase. It's too early to be very specific on what it is, but we still need, as an industry, to lift price levels as the margins are still too low. I also think that there is a need to lift the relative price of SC compared to newsprint and compared to LWC. But it's too early to really be specific on the actual levels, but we do target an increase from the 1st of January. When it comes to the cost side, it's true that this was mainly energy in the quarter. The market decreases of recovered paper and pulp have not really come into our books yet and probably will not be very significant this year in total, although there will be a small positive effect in Q4 in most likely. The energy hedging, it's true that in Norway there is a balance of long-term contracts, so all the units basically have long-term contracts. In Europe, that is not the case. So all our European units are more exposed to market price, which in one way or another relates back to general energy levels and the oil price. So we had some effects of that in the quarter. There's also a couple of items which are more specific in the quarter, and that relates to Brazil, that we have an ICMS regime, a VAT regime on energy, which there was a resolution in May, so we are now not paying the additional tariff on energy in Brazil, which also helps.
Okay, then one additional question just related on your other operations. It posted a small profit in the quarter. What was causing this improvement? And I guess we should assume normalization of the profitability for Q4.
I will leave that to our CFO, the other segment.
Yeah. The other segment is mainly the head office, and we also have business in recovered paper and some small other businesses. We are continuously reducing the head office cost, so the reduction or the improvement on other segment is mainly due to lower head office cost. We have fewer projects at the head office, so that is the main reason. We were particularly low in this quarter, but we will be at a lower level than we have been the first two quarters this year going forward. But we are particularly low this quarter.
Okay, thank you, and congratulations for the great result.
Thank you.
We'll move to our next question from Sal Sedazio from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Going back to the energy bill and to this 100 million benefit in Q3, do you expect this benefit to go through also in Q4 sequentially, or do you expect to stabilize? I mean, do you expect to have, was it a temporary effect in Q3, or your energy costs are somewhat lower going forward in your expectations?
This question, of course, depends on the general market for energy. So our bill, the European exposure, is exposed to the general energy market. So this is a comment which you always have to relate to the energy markets and the oil markets in general. But it's in the effect in Brazil, we expect to go forward. This is an ICMS regulation which has changed, so that we should expect to go forward. But for the European energy bill, it is dependent on the market level. For the current months, the present quarter, I would probably say that we don't expect big changes in our variable cost from Q3 to Q4.
Okay, thanks. And clarification on your full-year guidance. You said that you expect EBITDA to be somewhat stronger compared to last year. what's the number that you are considering for 2010? Is it 1.4 or the adjusted before the extraordinary gains you had in
the year? It's a good question. The guiding after the second quarter related to the 1.2, now we have lifted it to the 1.4. So when we talk now, then we give guidance, it relates to the 1.4.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. And another couple, if I may. Have you drawn the RCF to pay back the bond maturing in October 2011?
I would be very reluctant to comment on which bank accounts we use for any payments, bonds or others. So I don't think you will hear us comment on that neither now nor going forward. But what I can say is that we are managing the liquidity as any company should. We have too much liquidity under the old bank facility, which we retired in June. Now we have been running with quite low levels going into this, but it's clear that too much liquidity has a certain cost. At the same time, we know from our cash flow profiles that the autumn is stronger than the spring, which is also why we have the new RCF in place to take care of that. So liquidity-wise, while we are we're following it obviously closely, as any company should do, there is no real liquidity issue, neither around the fourth quarter, nor do we expect that to be the case in the first quarter. And our bond maturity profile means that the real big one is only in 2017, although you have maturities also in 14 and beyond. So from my point of view, the liquidity situation is managed in a good manner.
Okay, and two questions related to that. I'll ask it as a combined question. Can you update us on your progresses on the securitization front, and also if you're currently in discussion with banks to restructure the covenant schedule?
I will then leave the word to Mr. Avdendra and I on these two issues.
Yeah. First on the securitization, we are working on the securitization, and we have progressed. It has taken some more time than we expected, but we are in good progress, so we expect to agree on this during this year, if we decide to do it. Then on the covenant, you know, as we reported now, we are quite within the covenant ratio that we have. As we said, by the end of the second quarter, we have only four banks in the facility, and we are communicating regularly with the banks. But we are, we have a reasonable headroom on the covenants by the end of the third quarter.
Okay, thanks very much.
We'll move to our next question from Michael Yass from Chevrolet. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello gentlemen, it's Mikael Jofs from Chevrolet in Stockholm. I have a question there on one of your statements in your management focus going forward, where you're saying that the machine capacity in Norway and Europe is under scrutiny. Could you please give us some color and elaborate a bit on that? Thank you.
Yes, the statement is indeed there, and we have started the review of our asset portfolio in Europe, partly because while there is a reasonable delivery to capacity ratio presently in the market for newsprint, and we expect that magazine will also get there with the UPM closures, the market is obviously not growing, so we are preparing for a future with a slight but still negative growth rate, and with the present macro uncertainty, there is obviously an added risk of a downside to demand. So we will address our own supply situation to the demand situation, and we have 15 paper machines, big paper machines in Europe. I would be very surprised if we are running those into the future. It means that we will adjust the least competitive capacity, and I think the answers are forthcoming within the relatively near future. Exactly where and when, it's a bit too early to say, and it could be single lines, or it could even be entire sites. So I would certainly guide that there will be changes downwards to our capacities, but exactly where and when, it's a bit too early to say. But we are clearly signaling that we take responsibility for the supply-demand capacity.
Okay, that's great. And then just a follow-up question. You mentioned that you had four banks today. Could you just please mention who they are?
Yeah, that's it's the Norske Bank, it's SDB, it's Citi, and it's Nordea. So this is for our close relationship banks.
Perfect. Many thanks. Bye.
We'll now move to our next question from Linus Larsson from SEB Enskilda. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and congratulations on a strong set of Q3 results. I've got three questions. First of all, if you could guide us on the CapEx levels for the fourth quarter and 2012. Secondly, if you could give us some sort of number for your expected cash costs for potential capacity closures. And thirdly, if you could tell us a bit about what liquidity inputs you're expecting between now and your March maturity. And you did mention the securitization, if you could put a number on that one, and any other potential asset sales or other liquidity inputs. Thank you.
Okay, I will leave the last question to Audun, but I will answer the first two ones. So the CapEx level now, we have guided on a total year of about 500, so you could expect that guidance also for 2012, 500 million NOX CapEx level. If you divide that by four, you get 225, obviously. We are running at a somewhat lower rate than that. So in the fourth quarter now, the rate is somewhat lower than the 125 we would derive from our total guidance. But for next year, I think you should still use the same 500 for CapEx. The cash cost of any possible closure, of course, it's impossible to be precise without a specific site or machine, but what we could say as sort of a general average is that cash cost per 100,000 tons has historically been about 10 million euros.
Yeah, then to the cash, liquidity and cash flow. As you said, we had 2.4 billion in cash by the end of the third quarter. We have repaid this 1.5 in the US dollar bond maturity. And then what we have guided on is that we, looking at the EBITDA, where we have said around 1.4 means that we should have additional 400 something in EBITDA the last quarter. Then we are also guided on that we expect to reduce working capital by roughly 200 million. And then we will have a sale of assets between 100 to 200 million, which all of this is positive. Then we would estimate 100 something in CapEx, and interest would be likely 150 or around that, I think, between 100 and 200. So adding all that, we should be able to increase cash by 400 or 500 million in the last quarter this year. We're also running very thoroughly cash flow and working capital management for each individual business unit. So we expect that we will not see any increase of working capital coming into the first months next year either.
Sorry, could you repeat that last part? What kind of working capital build-up do you expect in Q1 compared to Q4?
We don't expect a very small build-up of working capital in the first month next year.
Of course, that depends a little bit on the price level. If we get a big price increase, I will take the working capital increase.
Yes.
But if you assume flat pricing, you're pretty much saying that the working capital build should be like
What we're saying is that traditionally we do build something, but we will run the company based on an optimized working capital structure. So it means it's a trade-off between what you can get on margin and what you carry in terms of capital. And I think what we see just now is that we don't foresee anywhere near the big increase we had in the first quarter of this year. Partly because there are some specific items which are not related to the operating working capital this year, and partly because we do not see the same price increase, obviously, in Newsprint Europe as we had last year. So that's why we don't think it's a big increase for the time being. But this is a very dynamic thing that we need to evaluate against the margin of the tons.
Yeah. Now, I do appreciate that first quarter 2011 was quite exceptionally bad from a working capital standpoint, but I would still have expected a slight increase in working capital in Q1 2012, but that is not necessarily the case, you're saying now.
I think you will see a slight increase, but I don't think you have a big increase. This year it was $500 million, of which almost half or 40% of that was not related to the operating working capital. So that should be gone, and then there will be some in the operating working capital, but it will not be anywhere near the levels we have this year.
That's excellent. Thank you very much.
We'll now take our next question from Nitin Diaz from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had about five questions. The first one was on your buybacks. Could you comment if you bought back any more bonds in October? And generally, what are your thoughts about buying back more bonds going forward?
Okay, you want to start there or you want to give us all the five?
Okay. The second one was has been answered on securitization. The third one was on energy contracts. If you can give us a rough split of how the energy contracts, the 2.5 or 3 billion NOX is split between Norway, Australia, and Brazil, and if you do sell those energy contracts, either associated with a mill closure or otherwise, what would be the tax implications of such a disposal? Because I understand that the Norwegian energy contracts have some kind of tax implications if you do sell them. And the last one would be, what was the currency impact on your net debt number for Q3 11?
Okay. Fair enough. The bond buybacks, I can comment in general. I don't think we will be specific on this as we don't report it, but it's also clear that buyback activity will probably be less when you're in a closed period, because that's where to give some guidance to it. In general, we are positive to any investment that yields a significant return in the short period of time. So it's clearly a balance on the liquidity side, which we have touched upon already, and the opportunities in the market. And, of course, with the dislocations in the markets, we have the opportunities in the third quarter to the tune of what you saw. Energy contracts, I can comment a little bit on the, let's say, potential sale and the possible tax implications. Then I will leave to Audun comments about the currency effect on net debt and also the split now between New Zealand, Brazil, and Norway. The tax implication of this is it's true that in certain jurisdictions, including Norway, you could be taxed for this, but it depends entirely on how the transaction is structured. So in other words, it's depending if you should sell something, it depends on the buyer what sort of tax regime you get. So I can, the only thing I can really comment is that you will try to structure the deal to have as little payable tax obviously as possible. And in the past we have been able to do that in most circumstances. But it's clear that you could be liable to some taxes. I think we had, in Brazil, we had some payable taxes on it. In Norway, the last time, we had no payable taxes on it.
Just to clarify, would that tax rate be in the region of 10-20%, or would it be much higher
If you structure it wrongly, it could be higher. If you structure it better, it could be lower. So normally with Norway, if you structure it right, you have no tax on it. If you structure it wrongly, you can have up to 40% tax on it.
Okay, understood. That's helpful.
Do you have the...
Yeah, we are saying we have roughly 2.5 billion the total value, and most of that is in the Norwegian contract. We have not given guidance specific on the split of it, but I can say most of it is in Norway. Then you also had a question on the currency impact on the net debt, and that is roughly 230 million negative. The gross is on the gross debt, roughly 360, but then we have quite substantial cash in dollar. So that has a positive impact. So the net impact is negative around 230.
Okay, and just on the buybacks, all the 56 million euro buyback, was that the 2016 bonds?
No, it was a combination of different maturities, not only 16.
Okay, understood. That's helpful. Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll move to our next question now from Michael Ginnings from Census Capital. Please go ahead.
I think everything's been answered. Congratulations on the quarter, guys.
Thank you.
We'll move to our next question from Chris Lindekew from Bank of America.
Hi, Luke. Good afternoon. A couple of questions for me. First of all, just coming back to this point on energy costs in European newsprint, the 100 million savings seems like quite a large number relative to your operating cost base for that division, and it's not immediately obviously looking at market benchmarks where you could have generated such a saving on energy. Are you able to kind of provide any more color to allow us to make a bit more sense of this?
Yeah. First of all, the 100 million is the total cost savings, and it's not, if we get the impression that it's all energy, that is not correct. So it's several factors. The biggest single factor is energy related. But it's also, this is total cost, it's both direct cost and indirect cost, and there is also an element of fixed cost saving in that number.
Are you able to give us a sense of how much is energy related?
We can give you a sense, but it's probably not, for modeling purposes, it's probably not helpful, but it's in the range of maybe 40 to 50 million in this quarter, but it's not, I would be hesitant if you use that for a benchmark going forward to visit that.
Okay, thanks. And in terms of volumes in your European newsprint business, your performance appears to be somewhat stronger than the rest of the market. In the past quarter and indeed every quarter so far this year, is that a relative performance that you recognise? And if so, is there any kind of reason behind that?
I think this is we recognise it probably from the same figures as you recognise it. So it's true from the numerical point of view. But of course, these mills have different ways of possibly calculating capacity, and it's probably also sometimes difficult to classify the products in different ranges. We have a relatively simple structure with two very large mills producing most of our newsprint. So I think it's true that our performance is reasonable, but I would not really draw the conclusion that we do much better than our competitors in this respect. But having said that, I think the operating performance on the main mills, Golbey and Skogn, the two big newsprint mills, have been satisfactory this year, to the point where we had to voluntarily reduce a little bit of the capacity because of margin problems on some of the exports.
Okay, thanks. Just a quick question on your outside Europe business. It appears that sequentially, quarter on quarter, your margins have improved. How does this reconcile with your statements of selling more volume to the lower margin export markets?
Yeah, first of all, there's a little bit of price increase in Australia, so the margins on the domestic tons is higher per ton. Let's say the cost figure for Australia is also developing quite good, and then there is more exports into the the Asian markets, but it has been offset by pricing. Of course, this also comprises the Asian and the Latin American operations, which means that the direct comparison to Australia is a little bit more tricky. But it was a strong, let's say, operating performance in the quarter of the 3 mils in Australia.
Okay, is there any more detail you can give us as to the driver of that strong cost performance outside of Europe?
First of all, there is, in general, we have also here quite significant improvement programs with all sorts of cost reduction measures, including usage of fiber and energy, and it's also it has been a reasonably good quarter for energy pricing into the area. It's long-term contracts, but there's some small fluctuations. But it's not single big factors which have it. It's a strong, let's say, underlying production performance. All the mills have been running at full capacity without stoppage, and we have almost 97% operating rate, which indicates a very healthy operation in the case.
Okay, and just a final question for you, given your past need to go out into the market and raise financing. Is there any particular reason that you've not taken advantage of your ability to raise secured debt under your documents to tie up what I guess must be probably the lowest cost of financing that you could do?
I think that there is certainly some restrictions in some of the documentation, so it would not probably be a material amount you could raise.
So, sorry, your view is that you do not have the ability to raise material secured financing over and above a receivables securitization?
That is correct. It's a reasonably limited amount. There could possibly be some, but some of the bond documentation is quite strict in terms of the disability.
Okay, so that would not be a financing strategy that you'd be kind of considering going forward.
I'm not saying we will never do anything in this respect, but it would not be a sort of a material amount of money.
Okay, thank you.
We'll now take our next question from Antonio Gura from GSSG. Please go ahead.
It's an answer already.
We'll now take our next question from Patrick Kirsting from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, and thanks for taking the questions. Just a couple of clarification questions and then a slightly wider one. The first one is being on your working capital guidance for 200 million of free up, I think that originally was for the second half. So given you had some outflows in the third quarter, can we expect that it's been slightly higher in the fourth, or is the 200 million now for the fourth quarter? The second one, a clarification, just on the RCF. I understand you can't tell us how you use which money for which payments, but can you tell us whether or not you've drawn on it? And then the slightly wider question on the paper market. I think you're talking about 1% negative volumes that you've seen year to date. If I look back at the second quarter, I think Europe was up about 3%, so all of that weakness was in the third quarter. And also, if I look at CEPI numbers, it actually seemed to have been deteriorating from July over August into September. Can you give us a bit more color on what you're seeing in the paper market or newsprint market, at the moment, and where you see that going in the fourth quarter? I think one of your competitors recently said that they are seeing some inventory builds in the industry.
Okay, working capital. I think you are right that this was guidance for the second half. With the fire in Halden, we expected some build-up in the third quarter on that mill specifically, and. All in all, probably a very limited effect on working capital. That is slightly negative, so we have some more receivables at the end of the third quarter than the second quarter, so a net build-up in the third quarter means that the total guidance needs to happen in the fourth quarter, so we still keep the total guidance. When it comes to the RCF, we have no further comments apart from the fact that this is unencumbered. We are in compliance with all the covenants. The start conditions on the 1st of September, we are satisfied. So from the 1st of September, this has been available to us and continues to be available to us. So I will not make a specific comment to this, but it is indeed available. When it comes to the paper markets, it is true, as you comment, that the air has developed weaker. It was somewhat better in terms of volumes in the early parts of the year. We had expected at the outset of the year to see a positive development in Europe total this year. That is certainly not going to be the case now. And it is also true that particularly in the UK, but also for total Europe, that the summer and the third quarter has been weaker. We do not really see a big inventory build-up, but of course there is a weakness here. And last year we had a lot of exports of newsprint out of Europe. All that has more or less, or the marginal part of that, has come back again. So there may be some inventory build-ups with some of our competitors, but we have not really seen that neither in the supply chain nor on our own books. Going into the quarter, it's clear that we see sort of on a general basis the next year and years with minus 1 to 3% there. It could be a bigger risk on the downside given the macro uncertainty that we see. But we have not really seen significant weakness as of yet.
Okay. But yeah, are you seeing the market firming up a bit from, I think, September was down 6.5% domestic deliveries around 6.5% and down over 7% for the total, including exports? Or has that stabilized a bit? And then secondly, maybe can you give us a flavor? Do you feel that part of that has to do with the price increases that were put through, or is that purely an underlying weakness in the end-user demand?
On the latter, it's difficult to say. Probably it's rather the uncertainty rather than the price increase, but I don't have a 100% final answer on that question. When it comes to October, it has been better, but as you would also seasonally expect October to be somewhat better. So I think it's a bit too early to draw trends from it, but October has been somewhat better.
Okay, thank you.
We'll now move to our next question from Mark Wade from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a couple of tie-up questions. I didn't quite catch it. Did you mention a figure for the amount of bond repurchases you had done since the 30th of September? The second one was you talked about cash costs for closures. I heard you say it was difficult to estimate, but don't know if you then gave some sort of broad guidance figure after that. The third one is, I'm still trying to understand this, where your head's at on the securitization. You know, this has been something that has been discussed now for a long time. I understand it's taking longer than expected, but to sort of say you expect to announce something this year if you decide to proceed with it, I'm still a bit unconfused here as to what extent you want to get this securitization done. And then lastly, you know, coming down to the covenants, looking at what you're saying around what you know, expecting to increase cash by $400 to $500 million by year end, your broad EBITDA covenant guidance for the year, should we assume that you expect to the same degree of headroom on your year end covenant as you had for the third quarter?
Okay, I will. The latter I will leave to Adrian, but I will take the first three. What we said on the bonds is that we have that there is a limited opportunity after the 30th of September. We did not comment specifically on it, but there has been a limited since we're in a closed period. We cannot do a lot of activity there. When it comes to I take the securitization question. I think that what we've said, and you are absolutely right, this has taken a long period of time. If we do go ahead, we will have a conclusion this year. That is still correct. And the only thing I can say is that, yes, we want to do it, but we want to do it at terms which are reasonable to us. So there is, of course, or has been also some back and forth on the terms. So it is not so that it is still a commercial decision, is my main point.
Mm. Then to your question regarding the headroom and the covenant. As you've seen from our presentation, our net debt to EBITDA was 5.49, just below 5.5. And 5.5 is then the covenant according to the loan agreement by the end of the year. and by the cash flow we have expected and the EBITDA we have guided on, we should be within the covenant also by the end of the year. It's difficult not to say where we will be because this is also heavily dependent on the currency development.
In relation to the asset disposals, obviously we're now, sort of early November. At what, for that 100 to 200 figure that you're talking about, how much of that is actually sort of firming up as we speak?
Yeah. I think what we said was 200 to 300 for the quarters. 100 of those have been realized in the third quarter. We are continuously realizing the latter also. So what is the reason why there is still a range there is that we are uncertain on what part of New Year's the let's say the difference between 100 and 200 lands on, but we are very confident about 100 in the quarter, and then it could be 200 this quarter or the quarter thereafter. I forgot the cash cost of closure to remind of the guidance I gave, and the general guidance from an historical point of view is 10 million euros per 100,000 tons of capacity.
Thanks a lot.
We'll take our next question from Ross Gilardi from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
The slide which shows the demand per region, and it's you showed China down 21% year to date, and I know you had it, it was a high number last quarter too, but have you gotten to the bottom of that statistic at all? Do you believe that number? And if so, or if not, could you explain why? And if that trend continues, would you expect old newsprint prices overall to come down quite a bit? I'm not really sure how big China is in terms of the global market for old newsprint, but would that potentially be a meaningful impact?
Yeah, it's a very good question. We use PPPC's numbers in order to have a certain consistency. Globally, the weakness of that is that the Chinese figure is indeed not correct, as you point out. Our own estimates is that the demand so far this year compared to last year inside China is rather flat. This is supported by the pricing in China, which is doesn't really have any direct restrictions on it, and the pricing stays firm and has done so through the year, which we would not have expected to see if you had a drop of more than 20%. Furthermore, of course, we have contacts in China, and they confirm that there is no real drop, but there is also not a lot of growth in the market. So if you're correct for that, the global demand is, instead of being down 5%, is down 2.2%, still driven to a large extent by North America, a somewhat flattish Asia, and a small decline in Europe. So I think that is the key question on the demand side, and it's unfortunately difficult to obtain the reasons why this happens. It's in our opinion, we think that the Chinese, for one, they want to get rid of export restrictions on newsprint, so they report a significant domestic demand shortfall. And I also think there is energy policy requirements in some of the provinces, which means that reporting less newsprint capacity is a way of achieving the centrally set targets in a reasonably good manner. But there is a lot of uncertainty on Chinese reporting, so it's a notoriously difficult subject. But I think the best estimates to use there is to keep China flat from last year to this year. So that means that if you look at Asia, I think the Asian market is in reasonable balance because of Indian growth mainly. And I think we don't need to see a lot of news either positively on the demand side or mill closures locally or otherwise to also see a somewhat firmer Asia into the first quarter of next year. And there are smaller mills being closed in Asia also. So I think for me there is uncertainty in the numbers, but maybe a small upside for the first quarter.
That, That's helpful, Sven. Thank you. But what about Brazil? I mean, it's just odd that you know Western European newsprint demand is outperforming. You know, both Brazil. Well, you're saying the China number probably is wrong, but does it make sense that the Brazilian market's down 5% year to date?
Brazil is also probably quite dependent on inventory swings from year to year. But it's true that the Brazilian market has been somewhat weaker than we thought also this year. But is it down 5%? Probably not in consumption figures.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll now move to our next question from Rebecca Clements from Knight Capital Europe. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions here. The first one is, given the expectation, at least by some of your competitors and yourselves, that prices will be up in newsprint or that price increase will be pushed through in the first quarter, do you expect to have any volume leakage into the fourth quarter, which would then depress volumes in the first quarter?
A very good question. Last year was probably more difficult in terms of containment because it was very clear and a significant price increase. So we had a reasonably high degree of containment on order side at that point. I think we will keep the same policy, so we will minimize the impact as much as we possibly can.
Okay, but at a minimum, it wouldn't be certainly wouldn't be as bad as last year from a volume point of view.
No, and it will not be. And last year we still had the old contracts running. That is not the case this year. So in our own figures, we were suffering from the old prices quite long into the first quarter, even for some contracts throughout the entire quarter. That is no longer the case for this for the next year.
Okay, and then on the fire that you had with the magazine paper facility, have you received all of the cash proceeds from the insurance company that you would expect, or is there more perhaps coming in?
No, we expect more to come in now in the fourth quarter.
Any idea how much that would be?
We have an idea.
Yeah.
I think we have received about 200 million of the settlement, so there should be a not insignificant amount of money still coming. But of course, we're still negotiating the settlement, so it's we cannot be extremely precise.
Sorry, somebody was loud here on the desk. Did you actually say how much more you expect other than the 300 million you've received so far?
No, we have received 200 million so far. The total settlement is not done, so the difference between the settlement and 200, we cannot be precise.
Okay, so 200 million so far. And then do you have an inflation outlook for your costs, so your raw material costs, and, well, I guess variable costs, for fourth quarter in 2012?
For the fourth quarter, I think you could expect relatively stable variable costs. We see a downward trend in the market price for recovered paper and pulp, so you will see some impact of that. But it's probably not unlikely to be materially different from the third quarter into the fourth quarter, keeping in mind that we already had a decrease from the second to the third quarter in indirect cost. When it comes to next year, I think it's slightly early to say, but we see a further weakening of both recovered paper and pulp markets, which should lead you to believe that there is a decrease, but I would be hesitant today to put the figure, but it's certainly, as it looks now, it's certainly a negative figure rather than anything else. So what that is, it's too early to say.
Okay, and then in the second quarter you had, I think it was on the newsprint side of your business, some issues with some restarts. You had a little bit of an operational hiccup, I think. Was there any impact of that in the third quarter, or was that all a second quarter impact?
All second quarter impact is also related to the Easter and May Day holidays, so there's no impact on that. So the operating performance in the quarter was indeed very good, and even to the point where we took some temporary downtime for margin reasons.
Okay. And then lastly, not to beat a dead horse here, but just to be clear, on the securitization, can you be a little more specific on what, you know, the terms are that you're sort of haggling with the potential providers about?
Not really, no. I don't think we can give you that because it's still in process, if you like, with two counterparties, so we would not be able to do that. But it's clear that we think securitization is a good idea because of our credit compared to our customers, and we still want to do it. But it's clear we cannot do it at all type of terms, and it's not only the price of the money, so we need to be able to find reasonable terms on also the practicality of the facility.
Okay, and if you did not do a securitization, because previously you've said that you were also potentially pursuing some bilateral agreements as well, or bilateral facilities, which would be unsecured. Is that something that you're still focused on, or is that's been secondary to the securitization and would only move to the forefront if you chose not to do a securitization?
I think for the time being it is probably secondary, but at the same time I think we have an open mind in the sense we are always considering what is there and always make commercial evaluations of what we should do. So I would not discard it completely, but clearly we are focused on finalizing the securitization.
Okay, and then lastly, if you got to a point with the securitization that you felt that the terms weren't going to work, I mean, is there a date on that? Have you given yourself sort of a general end deadline for negotiating on that securitization?
What we have also indicated here is that we need to do it this year. Either we do it this year or it's probably dead.
Okay, so if you haven't announced a securitization by year end, that means it probably won't be happening at all. Is that fair?
It's a very fair assumption.
Okay. All right, that's all I have. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll now move to our final question from Ken Poole from Independent Global Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. A couple quick questions. One is, I've seen kind of over the last few years a negative trend in the first quarter cash flow, and I was wondering if maybe you could give a little color on why that is and maybe a little guidance for first quarter next year. Also, see that the covenant was reduced. Can you maybe explain a little more about that and whether you expect any further changes going forward?
I will leave the covenant issue to Adrian. When it comes to the cash flows in the quarters, it's true that both from the operational cash flow and from the total cash flow of the company, it's skewed towards the second half of the year. So you have both normally working capital build-up in the first quarter and the first half, and you have more interest payments in the first half than in the second. So that those structurally will probably not change. But having said that, for the next year, we expect a lesser working capital build-up in the first quarter, which means that that the negative impact you've seen over a couple of years would be less, or you would expect to be less next year.
So you don't see a continuation of the trend? Because, I mean, not just on a seasonality basis, there's also been just a downward trend just looking at first quarter alone.
I agree certainly with you that has been the case, but we see less of that now coming into the next year, but there will be. You would still have the seasonality effects and the interest payment effects, but it's true that some of the more specific items, in other words, the non-working capital related provisions, etc., should be also less than it has been in the past.
Okay, thanks. On the covenant?
Yeah, the covenant, yeah. According to our the agreement with the banks in the bank facility, it's a tightening of the covenants from quarter to quarter. So this is according to the agreement. So we had, net debt to EBITDA should be below 5.75 at the end of the Q3. We were at 5.49 as reported. And then by the end of the Q4, also according to agreement, below 5.5.
And that tightening of the covenant, is there anything that specific that triggers that, or how does that redetermine quarter to quarter? Because I've seen that's changed since the previous quarter.
It's no change. Fixed at the start of the agreement. It's a tightening there. The reason why this is now tighter than what was anticipated is basically that the second quarter carries through on a 12-month rolling. So it will be tighter than we thought until we get the second quarter out of the measurement. But the schedule was agreed, and when we agreed the facilities, there is no change to the covenant, neither now nor will there be any change. It's fixed for the entire period.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
We have another question from Chris Lindekew from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hello. Just one final question for me. I missed the disclosure regarding the amount of bond buybacks that you did in the past quarter. Would you mind just repeating that number, please?
The bond buybacks?
Yes, please.
Yes. We can say we had a gain of 200 million on the bond buybacks. We have not disclosed the...
We have disclosed that we have bought back for a face value of 56 million euro and 27 million US dollar. That was the face.
And that's all in the past quarter?
In the third quarter, yes.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions in the queue.
Then we thank all of you for your attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.